Okay, here we go. All right. So let's kind of take a look at this. This is the first piece itself. The key to Rav, the key to, this is actually called Orot Me'ofel. We told you the first three sections of this Sefer Orot is called Orot Me'ofel, which alights really from darkness. And the title itself goes back, and by the way, just I tried to put here the footnotes of some of these comments of Rav Bezalel Na'or, so I can flip back and forth. I tried to make myself a second copy. The term of these first three parts of the Sefer actually comes from the phrase that's inserted in Birchat Yotzer, which is according to the Ashkenazic Machzor for festivals. You have the Yotzer, the Bracha, right after Yishtabach. And we say, you HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you bring Orot Me'ofel. It's the first stanza of one of the Piyutim right in Shachris on Rosh Hashanah. Or Yom Tovim, but we say it as well on Rosh Hashanah. Some people said it for Yom Tovim as well. So we're creating light from darkness. And that's pretty much what Rav Kook thinks about the era that he's living in. He's actually bringing light, and there's an opportunity to create light from the darkness of the Galut itself. And Rav Kook really considers the period of time that he's living in, the very transition period of time, which is really about trying to kind of go from the darkness of the Galut into the actual time itself of bringing the Gula itself. That's why it's called Orot Me'ofel. Yeah, I told you the three parts really about Israel, about war, which is really World War I, but it could be the war that's going on now in the Ukraine for that matter. It could be any war, some of the commentaries of Rav Kook say. And then the third part, which is really about, pretty much about real life, and the term he used is Renaissance. I was told I didn't pronounce it correctly. It's Renaissance and Renaissance, or revival. But this is the first part about Eretz Yisrael. And the key to Eretz Yisrael, according to Rav Kook, is that Eretz Yisrael really brings people together. Maybe I'll do just footnote 2 before we actually read it inside in the text itself. So there's a concept in Halacha that land of Eretz Yisrael, land of Israel, bonds. It's not Israel bonds. Land of Israel bonds. Do not buy it. This is not Israel bonds. The land of Israel bonds individual Jews into a collective. Something can't occur outside the land.
That's right, Rabbi. Yeah. Sorry, I was going to ask you this last week, but I forgot or didn't get to it. Before we start this, does Rav Kook's whole theory here tie into the Ramban's shita that there's only mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael and outside, it's not real?
Yeah, if he surely does, sure. Sure, I think a lot of people...
He doesn't really mention that in terms of the mitzvahs as much as more...
Correct, because because Ramban is really a line that a lot of people pick up, only Ramban says it most forcefully. But what Rav Kook is saying is something more. The Ramban is saying that all the mitzvot we do are most valid in Israel, right? Rav Kook is saying something else. Just read this line here. The land of Israel bonds individual Jews into a collective. Rav Kook is talking not about doing mitzvot. Mitzvot have an additional significance in Israel. I don't think that's so radical to say. I think a lot of people agree with the Ramban to make that kind of statement that, you know, doing a mitzvah, doing sukkahs in Israel is a lot more significant than doing sukkahs here in Thornhill. Not just because it's a lovely season of the year, not because you get to see people and go to Kotel. Inherently the mitzvah of any mitzvah is going to have more significance there. Rav Kook is saying that the people themselves change, become a different people in Israel. Israel brings us together into a collective. That's what Rav Kook is actually going to say. Therefore, if you don't have Israel, then something crucial is missing in terms of the people in within the peoplehood. It's not just like having a land that we can call our own. This is not about whether the land is going to be Ukrainian or whether it's going to be Russian. It's not about taking the land away from the Ukrainians and the Russians are taking it and bombing and so forth. No, the land of Eretz Yisrael is crucial to the existence of the people as a whole. When we're in the diaspora outside of Israel, we are different. We're dispersed. We're dispersed in the different groupings. I'm a Jew. You're a Jew. Now, that's actually very hard to say. It's very difficult for diaspora Jews to say that. But Rav Kook is saying that, and I'll show you just in a moment something that is the end of this footnote. But what he's trying to say that, first of all, in halachically, Eretz Yisrael binds us together. Something can't occur outside land. Mystically, something happens in Eretz Yisrael that can't be done outside land of Eretz Yisrael. It's even hard to define it. Just by the way, to point out the end of this footnote, and I didn't look it up, he quotes here from Avraham Lichtenstein, an article that he wrote a long time ago. This is young Avraham Lichtenstein. This may have even been when he still was in the yeshiva. Being a smicha Eretz Yisrael, Chutz Laretz. There's a sefer Beit Yitzchak is a journal. Beit Yitzchak was a journal put out by students, sometimes the teachers, and then why you put it out. 5719 is 1959. So this young Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, who points out the converse that in exile the Jewish people did not constitute a unified entity, is inconceivable. It's very hard to understand what that means, that we're not united together. We're not united together? We're all running around different pieces? You mean every Jew is on their own? We don't have a minyan? Of course we have a minyan. Of course we're together. So he points out, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, this is young years ago, before he even went to Eretz Yisrael, to Yeshivat Gush, we must differentiate between juridic, which is very legal, is formalities, and doctrinal solidities. I didn't go through it specifically, but clearly Rav Kook is saying that something unique happens, of course, to this idea of Eretz Yisrael brings us together. Rav Kook, just a little piece from the footnote, Rav Kook, of course, subscribes to the halachic notion. His objection is leveled at that halachically we're one people, right? His objection is leveled at the reductionists who say that the Torah is merely a cohesive factor to bound Jews together, analogous to a basket that bonds many small rolls into challah, a halachic mechanism known as sirosal. What this means is, when you take challah, challah means the mitzvah challah, not eating challah, right? You take the mitzvah challah, so you take it on different days, or it's on doughs. So actually, all the doughs should really be combined together. If I'm taking challah, let's say I have two doughs. I have two esot. So how women do it today, by the way, in many cases, they'll take a cloth and they'll put a cloth over all the doughs that they're baking, and then they'll take off the challah. The mitzvah of the challah is being done for all the doughs together. Usually, one of the other ways the Mishnah talks about was called tziruv sal. They put them all into a basket. The basket combines them. So even if I have different individual doughs, they're combined together to take one challah from all the doughs together. I don't have to take challah from each individual piece of dough. Right, for example, if I do dough today and I bake it, and then I did dough tomorrow, but if I do it, I take challah in the dough I bake today, and take challah in the dough I bake tomorrow at a different time. But if I have different doughs being done at the same time, I can combine them by putting them all into one utensil. Or as I said, what happens today, la halacha, practically, is women will suddenly take this big cloth and they'll put it over to combine them. It's like an inverted utensil combining them together. That's called...
So, Rabbi, it's kind of interesting.
Hold on. That's called sirosal. So what Rav Kook is saying, that, you know, it's not just about sirosal. Okay, but rather it means that then Israel is not just a tzirosal. In other words, it's not just something that combines us together. It's not just merely a cohesive factor to bind us together. Intrinsically, something is happening. Okay, Rav Kook is emphatic that the land of Israel must be not viewed as a means to an end, but rather an end to itself. It's not just the land of Israel is going to bring us together, a melting pot. We're all together in the same bucket. We're all together in the same land, and therefore something happens. No, the whole idea is that the Jewish people change intrinsically by being in the land. If something happens, then we really can't even begin to understand, according to Rav Kook, by being in the land of Israel. Being in the land of Israel is not just different. It's completely different than any other mitzvah. It's not just about doing mitzvah, but being in the land of Israel is something inherently unique about that happens to the Jewish people. Yes, Semi.
Now, yeah, so I was saying it's kind of interesting because according to this, it comes out that according to Rav Kook, a secular Jew living in Tel Aviv is on an elevated level more than a Kolo guy learning in New York City.
Possibly.
It's almost like he's in a higher level because he's part of that collective.
Right.
Even though he's devoid of Torah, where the guy in New York is full of Torah,
mm-hmm.
He's not part of that collective.
But he doesn't understand that yet. Correct. That's true. But he doesn't understand that. That's true. Yeah. It's like saying basically that I'm putting you into a candy store, but you don't know where you are. I blindfold you.
Right.
And you think,
right.
You know, I blindfold you and put you in a candy store, and you think you're in a slaughterhouse. Okay.
It doesn't matter. He's part of that collective where the guy in New York's not. Yeah. It's radical.
Right. Correct. But it means that, and that's exactly why Rav Kook is reaching out to these people in the kibbutzim who are secular. Who, because Rav Kook is saying basically these guys are changing the world. Now they got to change themselves first because they're eating non-kosher. They only have one kitchen for fleishik, milchik, pesach, chametz, everything, right? And treif, right? It's all coming out of the same commercial kitchen that they're all eating, and they're eating it 24/7. They're cooking on Shabbat and so forth. But they're doing something. Being in Israel is significant. They're not the end of the road. They got tons to do, but they're changing the world, changing Judaism. That's exactly what Rav Kook says. Anyways, we haven't started this book. I just wanted you to see how intrinsic this piece is all about. About what really is. It's not really an external means, is it, to a physical or strengthening nation. Eretz Yisrael is connected to Am Yisrael by a certain specialness that's hard to really define. So Rav Kook's challenge is to try to define the undefinable. Because you can't really, it's hard to explain what this really means, what Kedusha really means. We'll see this, we'll get a little further into the first. But this is, once again, this is slow reading, guys. Here we go, let's go back to the beginning. Now, just one thing to note here about this, this is the first part. Remember, it's the three parts of the first part. The first part, Eretz Yisrael, Melchama, and there's going to be the other one is going to be, what's the third part called? I didn't even look at the title itself. The third part, third of the three parts is called Orot Me, called Lights from Darkness, Orot Me Ofel, I think it's called. Right, Yisrael and its rebirth. So there's the first part here, part number one. Now, on later editions, not in the 1920 edition, they added in like a precis of each of the different subsections or sections themselves. So what they did in this case here is they didn't include them in the Hebrew. Because the Hebrew is the actual text that was found actually in the 1920 edition. Remember I told you about there were different editions. Every edition, they began adding and different, putting things into it as well. Yeah, so, but what they did was, in the English translation, that Salon Naor took from the later editions and kind of summarized what the topic is going to be. So it's actually very helpful as we begin to go through it to understand what this topic is. Remember I told you, each section is really like a standalone. Rav Kook, they're all arranged. There are eight pieces about Eretz Yisrael, but the truth is, each piece stands by itself. So we'll be happy if we can do one or two pieces a day. It's very heavy reading. So here, let's jump into it. What's the topic here? The land of Israel is not a means to an end of collective solidarity, but rather an end to itself. Okay, in other words, it's not leading us to kind of go, if we go to Israel, we'll get to Mashiach. Now, there are people that, by the way, don't even believe that. There are people who believe Mashiach is going to show and bring us to Eretz Yisrael, right? We want Mashiach to come and we'll all go to Israel. That's why we're doing mitzvot. That's what Lubavitch says. No! The real thing is that people think that when we'll get ready for Mashiach, we'll bring Mashiach, and Mashiach is going to be a means to an end. But really, Eretz Yisrael is going to be an end to itself. It defies rationalism. It's a mystical dimension. If you're a rationalist, by the way, I'm going to be very careful how I say this. I say if you're a rationalist, then it doesn't work for you. I may get half of you guys turn me off in the next the end of this. But Rav Kook basically says this, really to understand that you need to really appreciate it from a mystical, Kabbalistic point of view, more than simply a rationalistic point of view. The rational means I can understand. I see something. I see this is a sheep. I see the wolf eats the sheep. I got it. I understand that. But to be a rationalist, it's hard to define what Eretz Yisrael is. Be a rationalist, you can say, you know, a Theodor Herzl made a country. That's rational. Mystical means that, you know what, we're going to a country that really is the identity of the Jewish people. The hope of the land of Israel is what gives the diaspora the strength to continue to exist. Now, this once again, and I said once again, this is like, these are pieces that Rav Tzvi Yehuda added as precedes of each of the different chapters. So the hope of the land of Israel is what gives the diaspora the strength to exist, by hoping for Eretz Yisrael. That makes sense to us. But in other words, that gives us the power to exist. But the essential difference between Judaism and the diaspora and the land of Israel is going to be the fact that we're in the land of Israel. That's what this piece is all about. Let's go into it now. Eretz Yisrael einena davar chitzoni. This is the key opening line, the key of keys. It's going to come back many times. The land of Israel is not something external. Chitzoni is on the outside. It's not kinyan chitzoni lomi. It's not an external national asset. Let me just get my pointer. Where's my pointer? Pointer, come on down. Okay, get my pointer here. Just make it easier for me, guys. All right. The land of Israel is not something external. It's not something, not kinyan chitzoni. It's not an external asset of the nation. Not the fact that we now have a nation we can call ourselves, and that's good. Because if we didn't have a nation, we Jews are being bounced around from country to country. We Jews were open to persecutions in different countries. And by the way, as we talk about the Ukraine, you know, the conflict in Ukraine, that, you know what, Jews did not have such an easy time in the Ukraine. Jews did not have such an easy time. But more importantly, by the way, and I think I said this, it's not even like the history from 100 years ago. We're not talking about pogroms that existed in the 20th century in the Ukraine, the beginning of the 20th century. where Jews were killed and persecuted and chopped up in the Ukraine in the early 1900s. We're not even about the fact that the Ukrainians hated the Jews more than the Nazis in the 40s and the 30s. But even something as late as in last year when there were resolutions brought into the United Nations against Israel, the Ukraine either voted against Israel, or no, in most of the cases, I think there were like 11 resolutions, Ukraine voted against Israel 9 times and 2 times they abstained. That's it. They never voted with Israel. They never voted to support Israel. Not by chance. But Eretz Yisrael is not just about having a place that you can go. It's not something external. Rather, what is it? Rock. Bitur emtsoy lematara shel hidagdut haklalit v'chazaka hachzakat kima chevrati o afilo ruchani. Right? And it's what is it? It's not something external. It's not something on the end. It's not a means to an end of collective solidarity and the strength of the nation's existence, physical, even spiritual. It's none of the above. It's not this. It's not. It means none of these things are what it is. It's not chitzoni. It's not a kinyan chitzoni. It's not something in emsoi lamatzvashel. It's not a way to come together, bring the Jewish people together, and to allow them to exist. It's not even to help support us religiously. Now, don't view Israel as, well, if we all come to Israel, we can better have a religious community there. Many people believe that. Not just Rav Kook. Rav Kook is saying it's not. Rav Kook does not say this. It could serve that purpose too, but that's not the ultimate reason of the entry of Eretz Yisrael. It's not just the idea to bring the Jews together and say that we can have a great, that no, Jews are learning Torah today. Today, Jews are more Jews are learning Torah in Israel today than ever in the history of the Jewish community, ever in the history of the world. I mean, okay, there's a lot more secular Jews as well. There are a lot of challenges in getting the groups together. And there's different fractious coexistence between Haredim and Chilonim and so forth. But the truth is, Israel is a great place to become religious. But what is it instead? Is Eretz Yisrael hi chativa atzmuit kshura b'kesher chayim al ha'uma? What is Eretz Yisrael? The land of Israel is an essential unit that's bound by the bond of life with the nation. It's part of the nation of Israel, which is chabuka, which is like kissing. B'segulot p'nimiyot emitziyotah, it's like attached, tightly attached. Lachvok is the hug, it's hugging. In other words, it's united with the inner characteristics of the existence of the Jewish people. Eretz Yisrael and the people of Israel go hand in hand. Are you going to say, but we got the Torah in Sinai. Sinai wasn't Israel. You're right. Okay, Sinai wasn't Israel, but that's why we had to get to Israel. But once you got to Israel, it was part upon the Jewish people. The getting the Torah at Sinai was on the road to Israel. Israel itself is basically one of the characteristics of our existence. It's not enough to be saying that I'm a religious Jew. It's enough to. It's more important. It's more significant or tied up with being a religious Jew. So I'm a religious Jew who is living in the land of Israel. That's what it is. This is very difficult, I said once again, for us to accept as Jews who are living in the diaspora. That's why I said that once again. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, young Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, before he went to Eretz Yisrael, you know, 1959, writes in this essay that you got to understand this more from a formal element. It doesn't mean that we're disunited. We're not Jews today outside of Israel. And we told Kach, and because this, says Rav Kook, I'm giving you a concept that's so hard for me to explain. I can't really explain it to you. And because this, it's really impossible to stand, to understand, to appreciate what the content is of the segula, of the uniqueness of the kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, of the uniqueness of Eretz Yisrael, of the holiness of Eretz Yisrael. In other words, I'm telling you that it's part and parcel. I can't even describe what it is. What is it to be a Jewish? If I ask you, what does it mean to be Jewish? Could you really explain it to me? I don't think you could explain it to anybody. I think that, I forget who says it, Nesiv HaShalom, I remember, brings in one of the early Hasidic Rabbeim, that a non-Jew asked him, what does it mean to be Jewish? And he gave him a very simple answer. And then he told his Hasidim, the Rebbe told the Hasidim after he left, he said, I can't even explain to myself what it means to be Jewish. How am I going to explain to a non-Jew what it means to be Jewish? To be Jewish is something basic. The same way, because there's something about Kedusha at Eretz Yisrael and Kedusha at Yisrael, part of the holiness of the Jew is understanding and living in the holiness of Israel. Israel is a fundamental linchpin in that. So that's what it means. That's, it's not just simply brings Jews together. It's not a place for Jews to live. It's not a safe haven for Jews. It's not a place for people to go to refugees. Then we're going to take people in from the Ukraine and so forth, Jews, non-Jews and so forth. We talked before the class started a little bit about that. It's really about being Jewish as having a living land of Israel. We couldn't do it for thousands of years. Okay, we couldn't do it, but it doesn't mean that we had everything we needed. We had beautiful communities in the diaspora, right? The tons of Torah was learned, but something was missing.
Rabbi, isn't that question just asked what it means to be Jewish? This whole issue with Whoopi Goldberg when she said, "Are we part of a race or not?"
Yeah, so she doesn't have the answer.
No, I'm just saying to you, are we a race?
Surely not a race. We're not a race.
We're a nation.
But we're a nation. What does that mean? I don't mean that what is a Jew. I mean, what does it mean to be Jewish? You say, well, I'm Jewish because my parents
are Jewish. Someone said you're racist. If you're anti-Jewish, are you racist or not?
If you're anti-Jewish, you're racist? I don't know. Don't ask me Whoopi Goldberg. But all I'm saying is being Jewish or not Jewish is not, I'm Jewish because my parents were Jewish, okay? I'm Jewish. What makes me Jewish? I keep Shabbat. That's not true. Because there are Jews out there who don't keep Shabbat, right? But what does Judaism mean to me? Can I describe it in like a 25 word? Can I describe it in 2,500 words? What does it mean to be Jewish? There's something that gets beyond simply what I'm doing. It's more about matzah. It's more than matzah balls and chicken soup, isn't it? It's more about even just matzah and Pesach. There's something intrinsic. If you're really living...
No, it means my mother's Jewish.
Sorry?
I'm Jewish. My mother's Jewish, I'm Jewish.
I'm not asking why you're Jewish. I'm asking what does it mean to be a Jew? What do you do to be a Jew? I'm rephrase the question. Rav Kook is telling us that, this is hard for me to even describe this, and therefore it's hard for me to explain to you what it means to Kedusha Eretz Yisrael. Because being a Jew, living in Israel, is part of what being Jewish is. I'm not in Israel. You're not in Israel, I'm not in Israel. We're here. So something is missing in our mahut, in our identity. We wish we could be there. Maybe wishing to be there almost helps us being there. But something is part and parcel. It's not simply that I feel good about living in Israel. It's not simply that I send my money to UGA. It's not simply I spend vacations there, which I don't necessarily always do. But it's something basic to what Kedusha is. Kedusha is a term that they have sanctity. Is such a word, difficult word to identify and to try to give you an understanding what it is. You can't understand it rationally. Yes.
Say that it's really, when you look at it, if you look at it and understand it, it's something deep within our soul. That's really what
right.
it is.
So now you tell me what a soul is. You tell me what a soul is, and you tell me to describe what a soul is. You tell me what the soul wants from me. We're talking among friends here. We learn this, and we study this. Rav Kook says it's something that is so difficult to describe. I can't really tell you what it is. I can't really give you a good definition. Let's go a little further, and you'll see what I mean. I want to show you a footnote a little bit too, of Na'ar. Well, what are we trying to do? We really can't understand the purpose of Segula Kedusha Eretz Yisrael, the uniqueness. Segula is like something special about the holy specialness of the holiness of Eretz Yisrael. Rotzilat Polet Omer Chibata, and to bring to the forefront, or to bring to the practicality, the depth of our love for Eretz Yisrael that we have. You can't do this b'shum haskala rationalit by any rational understanding. Enoshid physical. Enoshid is physical, yeah, or human. Any human rational understanding, you cannot really explain what Kedusha Eretz Yisrael means in a rational way. Okay, what does it mean? So what's the best I can do? Ki'im beruach Hashem asher ala umma b'chlala. The only way that I can do that is I'm talking about the spirit of the land that is the soul of Israel. Nishmat Yisrael, in other words, the Ruach Hashem, the spirit of Hashem, that's on this, the part of the nation. Be'hadba'ah hativit haruch haner sheb nishmat Yisrael. This is words that are hard to understand in English. This is a beautiful poetic statements of Rav Kook. What does this mean? Has he translated the spirit of Hashem that's on the soul of Israel, which is really in there? And he doesn't, by the way, can't even translate all these words. But if you can understand the spiritual nature of God on the land of Israel, on the people of Israel, that's what Israel is all about. Which, by the way, let's just go a little further. I want to show you this footnote number 3. Shishihi sholachat et kaveha. I think it's kaveha to read it. It sends forth its different hues, bitzvaim tivim. In natural, it gives out natural hues, natural colors, B'chol harachot shel hagashah b'riyah. Gives out all kinds of natural colors. It's a natural part of us. We're natural colors. Like, I give out natural colors. I see different things in natural light. There's no filter. I'm not filtering into black and white. I'm not filtering into a blue hue, a blue color, a blue filter, a red color. In everything of what I'm doing, hagashah b'riyah, which every healthy kind of feeling that I do, mizorachat, and it causes to light, and zrichatal yonah, it causes God's heavenly light, supernal heavenly holy light, or spirit, alpi oto amida sheruach kedusha yonah. That happens, this light that's coming out shines according to the measure of supernal Holy Spirit, which is filled with light and pleasantness, the heart of the holy thought, and deep Jewish thinkers. Now, can anyone describe what this means? What does this really mean? What does this actually mean? It's filling up everything. But whatever it is, it satiates everything that I'm there. Like, I don't know, it's like you give someone, I'm trying to think of a good example. Here, I put barbecue sauce on my steak. I saturate the barbecue sauce into the steak, and it absorbs into it. Well, so everything tastes in this barbecue sauce. Or I put alcohol into a cask, and it absorbs the taste. The taste of the cask, of the charred cask, is absorbed and runs through the entire whiskey that comes out the other end. That's exactly what's going on now. Kadosh Baruch Hu, these are not necessarily the best examples, but they're physical examples you and I can relate to, are telling me somehow the spiritual idea of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the land of Israel is so basic to the existence of what the Jew is. Now, everybody understands when you're talking about the sense of Kedusha, it goes against rational understanding. Let's go back to the footnote here. Footnote number three. Footnote number three is a long footnote by Betzalel Na'or explaining Rav Kook. Remember, this is the editor of this piece. He writes these footnotes. In general, writes Betzalel Na'or, Kedusha is by definition something that cannot be understood rationally. It's true. I'll tell you, one of the things that I've had the hardest thing teaching in chat is in grade 10, there's a course that we do a number of months. We teach about Eretz Yisrael. We go through the history of Israel, the Tanakh of Israel, of Eretz Yisrael, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, the promise, the Avot. And there's also a part that deals with the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. I taught it to teenagers, and I walked away at the end of a few weeks of teaching about Kedusha, and I said, they don't get it. It's hard to explain to teenagers what Kedusha means. It's hard to explain to me as an adult what holiness means. Teenagers want to see real things, real now. Show it to me on the screen. Show it to me in the app. You know, point, tell me where I can find it. Where can I buy it? You can't understand Kedusha. So Betzalel Na'or says, Rav Kook is talking about something that you can't explain. You can't explain it rationally. Okay, and he quotes here from the non-Jew Rudolf Otto, who, by the way, was not necessarily an anti-Semite, understood this truth in his book, Der Helika, the holiness. The root kadosh, kuf dalet shin, means removed or transcendent. We refer to God as HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is Betzalel Na'or explaining it. Why is God called HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Holy One, blessed be He? Because God is totally transcendent and remote from our grasp. Because you can't understand God. You're never going to understand God. So concerning specifically Kedushat Eretz Yisrael, the sanctity of the land of Israel, Rav Kook observed that the name of the second patriarch, not here, but he writes in a different place, the name of the second of our patriarchs is who is Yitzchak. This is a great vort. We have Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. The second one is Yitzchak. What makes Yitzchak special? Yitzchak is the only one of the patriarchs that's born and dies in Israel, that never leaves the land of Israel. Avram is born outside of Israel. Jacob is outside of Israel, has to go outside of Israel at the end of his life. He's buried back in Israel. He dies in Egypt. But Yitzchak is the only one who never leaves Israel. His whole life from beginning to end is in Israel. And Rav Kook points it out that the word Yitzchak, Yud Sadi Chaf Chet Kuf, forms the initials of four different appellations for the land. It's called Eretz Yisrael. Obviously, they're all going to be Eretz. But the second word, Eretz Yisrael, that's the land of Israel. That's the Yud from Yitzchak. Eretz Hatzvi. Tzvi means the land of the heart. The beautiful land, like the heart, like the deer, the antelope that runs around. Tzvi is the Tzadi from Yitzchak. It's called Eretz HaChaim, the land of life. Chaim is the Chet from Yitzchak. And it's called Eretz HaKadosha, the holy land. Kadosh is the Kuf. So Yitzchak stands for Yisrael, Tzvi, Chaim, and Kadosh. So all of the letters of Yitzchak, which of course means laughter and happiness, are really related to Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, the Rav Kook writes about this in the Siddur, Olot HaRiyah. Yitzchak was therefore the first Sabra. This is Betzael Naor pointing this out. He's symbolic of land. Avram is born outside land. Jacob dies elsewhere. But Yitzchak was born in land and never left it. Now, when you know about Yitzchak, what do you know about Yitzchak? Very little. It's very hard. Yitzchak is the holy person who lives the land of Israel. Says Rav Kook points out, is there any biblical figures inscrutable as Yitzchak? We don't understand Yitzchak. We don't know that much about him. What we do know about him is so hard to really understand. They took him up to Mount Moriah. They put him on the altar and he walked away. What kind of change did that lead to him as he sees the knife coming down to him and the angel showing up and said, don't slaughter your son Avram. What does Yitzchak do that he wants to give the bracha to Esav? What does he not know what he's doing? Is he out of his control? Is he not following what's going on here? So the life of Yitzchak is a life that you don't understand. Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cohen Cook, this Rav Cook's son, referred to Yitzchak's behavior as nifalut, a passivity, okay? Because we don't really see him actually being doing things. And once again, without going through all the side points here, Isaac's passivity is a mystery to us. What motivated him? What lies below this passive exterior? Why is he so fond of the wicked Esav, who's the apotheos of physicality? Thus, it is fitting that Yitzchak, most mysterious of men, symbolize a land that defies rational definition. Obviously, we read the story of Yitzchak, we say, oh, Yitzchak didn't know what was going on. Rivka was in tune with things. No, you can't say that. Yitzchak is an enigma. Yitzchak is a mystery. And guess what? The understanding the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, writes of Cook, is also mysterious. So you can't really say that. Yes.
As far as Yitzchak goes, have you read some of the, I don't know where it was, but maybe part of the Talmud or the Kabbalah, where Yitzchak's soul was initially a female soul?
I'm out of my league on this kind of Kabbalistic stuff. I'm sorry. I don't
know. There's a lot of stuff here with Yitzchak. It's interesting.
Yeah, okay. And but more importantly, there's not that much that we know with veracity about Yitzchak. The stories of Yitzchak leave more questions than they really answer. That's what he's trying to say. He's trying to say that, you know what, trying to explain Eretz Yisrael, we're not dealing with Yitzchak so much. Yitzchak is the analogy of the Jew that's born in Israel, that lives in Israel, that dies in Israel. But that's what Israel is. Israel is an enigma. Understanding Israel, not an enigma that we think was contradictions. Understanding the Kedusha, the holiness of Israel, is something that we accept. We talk about it, we blab about it the whole time. But rationally, how can you understand what's going on? Says Rav Kook, you can't, but it's basic, inherent into what Judaism is. Somehow, and that's why he began the chapter, Eretz Yisrael einena davar chitzoni. A land of Israel is not something external, not something on its own. Not simply on it, just a means to an end, or not even simply just a way to bring us together. There's something basic to Judaism about being in Eretz Yisrael. This is what Rav Kook believed. Now, you may disagree with this. You may say, I can't live with that. Some of you may say, that's, you know, what about all the Jews that live outside of Israel? Was Rav Kook simply wiping them off? No. Rav Kook believed that he lived in an era. Rav Kook actually believes he lives in an era where there's a turning point, there's a change taking place, and he does. Clearly does. The beginning of the 20th century is a change in terms of trying to get Jews to come back to Eretz Yisrael. It never existed for hundreds of years before. Nobody went back. People couldn't go back to Eretz Yisrael. It was dangerous. I'd say they couldn't. But it was like a suicide mission to try to travel by boat or by land to get to Israel. And if they did, they didn't have a productive way to make a living. They were not farmers. They were not workers. They were people who simply relied upon the dole, the handouts they got, the chalukah they got from Chutz Laretz. So what's changing in the 20th century is, besides the fact that there is in general a lot of countries are pushing for their own personal identity, their own rights of nationalism, and the Jews as well, and the Zionist congresses and political Zionism and social Zionism are pushing for it. But there's something changing, and there's an opportunity in Judaism to get back to that and move to the next piece, which moving towards Eretz Yisrael, moving towards getting back to Eretz Yisrael itself. Okay, now. Oh, let's keep going because we don't want to finish this piece here. So this is the piece. So what am I up to here now? So in other words, there's something more than just simply about something external. It's something basic that it radiates natural hues in all the avenues of healthy feeling and shines according to the measure of supernal Holy Spirit, which fills with life and pleasantness the holiness of the holy of thought and deep Jewish thinking. I'm not sure which is a better way to translate it. That's what it is. Now, Hamachshava. Let's go back. Let's begin the next sentence. Hamachshava al dvar Eretz Yisrael. The thought about Eretz Yisrael. Okay, as shurak erachitzoni, which you think about land of Israel as an external value, which is Kidei HaMadad Agudat or Agudat Chayuma, as a way to bring the people together. This idea of having a thought of Israel as a cohesive force, which not everybody had, by the way, in the days of Rav Kook, but we have it today, clearly, and that's the message UGA says. Everybody, you know, you've got to help our Israel. Israel brings us all together. We all focus on Israel. This says Rav Kook, Afilu kishi ba kidei levatzer al yadat vayon hayudi bagala. Even if it comes only to reinforce the Jewish idea in the diaspora, not just political reasons, not just secular reasons, not just to be the startup nation, but you tell me that Israel's cohesive, a cohesive force, even to reinforce the idea that Jews living in the diaspora will say, we look forward to your coming back to Zion, we're looking forward to coming back to a base of Mikdash, we hope that you look after Israel. In other words, if this kind of thought, even if it's a positive religious feeling, and in order to make us more Jewish or more religious, even if it's coming only to reinforce, to preserve the identity of the Jewish people, and to strengthen our amuna, v'hayira, and the awe that we have of the land, v'yachizuk shel mitzvot hamasiyot, and to strengthen our faith, and to strengthen our practical mitzvot, our observance of the mitzvot, I'm not sure what the word noga means. I skipped the line. Haguna, in a wonderful way, haguna is hagun proper, is not considered a fruit that's worthy to exist. If you think the idea of Israel is to bring us all together, that's the purpose of living in Israel, that's the idea, then you're missing the boat. That's not even a fruit that you'd want to keep. That's the kind of fruit that doesn't make the grade. It's subgrade fruit. Subgrade purpose. Why? Ki ayesod hazehu ra'ua. This kind of foundation, this kind of belief, is shaky, berach etan hakodesh. And compared to the etan, the strong holiness of Eretz Yisrael, the strong holiness of the might of Eretz Yisrael itself. Etan means strong and might. This is the holy might of Eretz Yisrael. So thinking about Israel as a way to bring Jews together doesn't hold a candle, in other ways, to the real purpose of Eretz Yisrael, which is really that brings the foundation of the Jewish people. Wow. Okay, wow. Now he believes this. This is how he starts out his first chapter. Hamut amiti sharayon hayadut bagola bo yavo, the real strength, the true strengthening of the Jewish ideal living in the diaspora, of people being strong in the diaspora, bo yavo is only going to come rak mitzad omek shikua b'Eretz Yisrael. The strengthening of the Jewish idea in exile is only going to come about through its immersion in the land of Israel. Shikua being immersed in the land of Israel. In other words, the Jews living in the diaspora are only going to stay strong the more that they actually realize the real place to be is in Israel. That sounds like a crazy idea. Well, if they believe there should be in Israel, what are they going to do in the diaspora? The answer is that you and me. Okay, now he's talking to you and me. Our strength living in the diaspora only comes when we realize that the real purpose of the Jewish people is to live in Israel. Because I'm not here.
Yeah, and Rabbi, I mean, to this point, actually, you could almost say with what's happening in Ukraine, the mayor Klitschko, the president, Israel was the only country that was able to broker something between the two of them. And I don't know if the numbers are now in the hundreds of tens of thousands that have actually gone to Israel. So correct. The strength of Jews in diaspora and bringing them to Israel, I mean, that right. I don't know if they brought over religious Jews, you know, that came over. But right. You needed that connection of Jews in the diaspora, the connection back to Israel. I mean, it's almost prophetic a little bit of what he's seeing. By bringing them over, you're assuring the tipping point that you have now more Jews in Israel than you have in all of the diaspora.
Yes, okay. It's true. And that's actually what Israel did. And once it was founded as a country, right? It brought over Jews from Yemen, brought over Jews from Morocco, brought over Jews from the different countries, brought over Jews from Russia. The whole idea of all these Russians who came and out once the Iron Curtain cracked down. And when we were kids, you probably heard, some of you are my age will remember this. All the rallies we had, and we used to have rallies in New York City in front of the Soviet mission to the United Nations. We would have rallies all the time for the Soviet Jews, and eventually, the refuseniks eventually got out, right? Okay, not all of them were religious. Well, we know that, but that's not the point. The point is that Israel became a haven, right? But I think he's trying to say
now we have more Jews in Israel than we have in the diaspora.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly. The tipping point, there are surely more people. If you include the non-Jews, there's more people in Israel. But if you include the Jews, we may be closer to the tipping point. I'm not sure if we've actually reached it yet. We're almost there. It'll come in 2 or 3, 4 years. But you're right. It has changed all dynamics. But I think he's even talking not only to poor Jews who are suffering in the Ukraine or poor Jews who are suffering in different countries who had to be evacuated and brought to Israel, or the Ethiopians, the Falashas, so to speak, for example, who came to Israel. He's talking about you and me. I think he's talking about you and me who are living in the diaspora. He says the whole purpose of Jews living in the diaspora today is only going to come mitzad omek shikur b'eretz Yisrael. We can only go on living. We can only strengthen ourselves only by the rent, as much as we immerse ourselves in the Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't mean spending dollars in Israel, spending your tax, your tourist dollars. It means believing that that's the place. I mean, it's fascinating, because if you believe in it so much, you should be there. But we can't be there, so we're here. That's what he said. That's really what he's trying to say. Mitzikvar Eretz Yisrael yikabel tamid atot chotu notov hatzmiyot. And by the hope of Eretz Yisrael, by the hope of the land of Israel, all the Jewish communities will receive its essential characteristics. Jews all over receive their basic existence characteristics from the hope of Eretz Yisrael. The expectation of salvation is the force that preserves exilic Judaism. So the hope that we're going to be in Eretz Yisrael, the hope that, in other words, that with salvation is going to come, keeps us going. Now, it doesn't mean, once again, that it's not external. We hope we'll be there because just to survive. Recognizing that there's a center, the whole idea that Jew revolves around everything in Eretz Yisrael. You really believe it. You definitely believe it. That's why
I believe it, but I don't know if my very close friends believe it.
Right. I mean, you and I. Okay, you're right. Correct. My close friends might not believe it either. But clearly we believe it, because I'm just saying something is clever, something as simple as the fact we daven facing to Jerusalem. Right, we point ourselves towards Jerusalem, not just prayers, but the whole way in which we daven the Shemoneh Esrei. We're always facing to Yerushalayim, we're facing to Eretz Yisrael. All he's saying is that basically the whole existence in Chutz La'aretz really goes down to the fact that we actually have to be within Yerushalayim itself. So in other words, the Judaism of the land of Israel is really pretty much what's really taking place, what's really salvation for itself. Hayadut Eretz Yisrael, Hu Yeshua Atzma. The Judaism of the land of Israel is the actual Yeshua itself. In other words, the creativity of living in Eretz Yisrael really causes us to really exist itself. But this idea that the whole living in Eretz Yisrael is really going to be an essential characteristic of what salvation is all about, and looking towards that, I think Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook would always sign off with the words, "The Mitzapa Yeshua, I'm expecting salvation to take place." That's how he would sign his name below his name. I'm trying to remember, I know he says it's one of the footnotes here. Right, Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook would actually write, "Bitzviat HaYeshua HaShlema," in the final, looking forward to the final salvation for all the Jewish people. That's how when his son would sign off all his letters itself. Hamitzapa LiYeshua, LiYeshua HaShlema. Okay, the finale. So this is really the first piece itself. Now this is Rav Cook, okay? Okay, how are we doing?
Good.
Yes.
Further what Jeff mentions is that, you know, unfortunately, life in the 20th and the 21st century in America, and I would maybe to a lesser extent in Canada, I would venture to guess that about 90% of American Jews consider America their Israel.
Yeah, maybe. Okay.
That's very troubling. But, you know.
Okay. Yeah, you're right.
It's a reality.
Yeah.
Especially among non-religious Jews.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not even sure. I'm not sure if that's true today anymore. That may have been true at one point. At one point, it was considered inappropriate to criticize Israel publicly. And of course, we have American Jews. We have Canadian Jews too, by the way. It's not just American Jews who have this kind of monopoly. There are groups today that criticize Israel. There are groups today that actually, you know, are part of will join with a BDS. Believe it or not, there are Jews out there who will join with a BDS movement.
Fascinating. Sure, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I actually remember once upon a time, I'm just drawing my experience, once upon a time, I was interviewing for teachers. I must have been for a Jewish history teacher in chat. This is actually a true story. I was interviewing, and I got a very impressive resume from someone who was teaching in a university in Ontario, who was he just got a job. He wasn't really on a tenure tracking university, and teaching in chat's a fairly nice job. So he actually sent me his resume, and we spoke on the phone. And then I began to dig down a little deeper, and I found out that on his university, he was very much involved with the BDS movement, the BDS group on the university itself. Fascinating. Unbelievable.
What is BDS? I apologize.
Boycott and divestiture. Means those people who want to boycott Israel. I forgot what the S stands for. Boycott and divestiture.
Boycott, divest, and...
something else.
Sanction.
Thank you. Sanction. But he was actually, you know, and once again, like everything, you don't have to look too far these days. You go on social media, you look on the guy's Instagram, or you look on the guy's Facebook page, and you see everything he's putting up there, and his name shows up, and he's the guy who's arranging these kind of... He's a Jew. He was definitely Jewish. He was definitely a member of the faith, a member of the tribe, so to speak. Now, I got to be careful how I say this, because, of course, I'm probably legally not cannot say that I did not hire him because of that, but he didn't get an interview at any rate. We never even got that far, but it could
I'm
be
so true. Happy to hear that.
Yeah, no, true, but because you always try to find out before you bring a person in for an interview, you want to find out what you know about this person. The fact that a person will put this up publicly, sometimes there are skeletons in closets you can't find out until it's much later in the process. But this was something the guy was proud to talk about. But he put up on his Facebook page. He's all about this. Can you imagine this? And this guy clearly was a member of the tribe. So there are people today who don't really understand so much. They don't even look at it as you know. They're antagonistic to Israel. They're anti-Israel. It's not that they're ignoring Israel. We have people who are self-hating Jews today that speak up about it. The whole big problem with, you know, with certain groups even in the United States, like J Street and so forth, and other groups that speak out negatively to Eretz Israel. You want to speak out about it against Israel? Go live in Israel. Go live there. You know, it's easy to kind of throw stones from afar. At any rate, this is pretty much really what the first chapter is. So the first chapter is really kind of saying, and, you know, in summary, let's go back and see if the summary makes sense. Land of Israel is not a means to an end of collective solidarity, but rather it's an end to itself. It's part of being Jewish. The same way, I wouldn't say the same way like Shabbat. It's more than Shabbat. It's something so basic. It defies rationalism, its mystical dimensions. He's going to talk in part three about the mystical part of it. The hope of the land of Israel is what gives the diaspora strength to continue to exist. The hope of the land of Israel, this gives us our strength, is the fact that we're hoping that Israel gets stronger. It's fascinating. And then he talks about the essential difference between Judaism and the diaspora and that of the land of Israel. The land of Israel itself is something basic. And so then the diaspora, we're missing really a basic part. How do you define it? Very difficult. Really very difficult for us to define what actually is in Eretz Yisrael. But this is kind of the opening stitch in terms of what's going on. So let me give you a kind of summary of what this chapter is. A, Eretz Yisrael is not merely an external means to a physical or strengthening or spiritual strengthening nation. It's not just that. It's inseparably connected to Am Yisrael by a divine segula. It's part of Israel. Land of Israel, people of Israel is one. People of Israel and land of Israel go together. We said it's not rational. It's only through the divine spirit which resides in our national souls. So nationally, it's a group thing. Not even my soul. Every soul of the Jewish people together really identify with Israel. The inner understanding, the understanding of the inner connection between Eretz Yisrael and Jewish people comes to us through the rabbis who actually, you know, they have developed, have gone into the mystical parts of what Kedusha is. If you really would think about this on a superficial orientation to the land of Israel, if you're using it in a positive way to strengthen Judaism in the Galut, that's a faulty foundation. That's probably the most strongest point that Rav Kook says. If I'm using Israel as a collection, as that sal, that basket that brings everybody together, even if not just politically to bring people together, but wholly to bring people together, that's still faulty. It's not complete, because I've got to really talk about the exalted value of Eretz Yisrael. It's much different. It's not just bringing people together, something special happens. The strengthening of we who live in the Golah, the diaspora, will not come through the strengthening of Jewish life in the diaspora, but rather through the strengthening of its connection to Eretz Yisrael. That's really what he's saying. That's what this point of is. In other words, you want to strengthen Jews living in the diaspora? Don't strengthen the community. Don't pump your money in here. Pump your money into Eretz Yisrael. That's really what he's saying. But understanding that Eretz Yisrael, the stronger that Eretz Yisrael is, the stronger it gets. The Jews are living there. The stronger we become who are not yet living there. And the stamina and the cohesive force of diaspora Judaism is the yearning for salvation of the Jewish people to go to Israel. And the Judaism of Eretz Yisrael is the salvation itself. That was the last piece he said. That's the most difficult thing to understand. The Kedusha, or sorry, the Judaism of Eretz Yisrael, living Judaism in Eretz Yisrael, is actually part of what the Yeshua, part of what the salvation really is. That's the salvation of the Jewish people, is we will go to Eretz Yisrael. Rav Kook says it couldn't be done. In his generation, things are now taking shape. When does he write this, Father? When does he write this first thing we just did today? Remember, this is part of the chapters that he wrote when he couldn't get into Eretz Yisrael, when he was outside in Switzerland in the beginning of World War I. He was traveled outside to collect money, and the First World War started. He couldn't get back in. So you can imagine, you just got to really feel the pathos as he writes this, that I'm out of Israel, and I'm keep living because, you know, eventually Eretz Yisrael is going to get me back in. Eventually I'm living for Israel itself. That's the opening stitch of what this piece of Eretz Yisrael is. Very powerful, more powerful when you realize when it was written and who wrote it. But this is what he believes. This is what life is all about. This is what Judaism is all about, but living in Eretz Yisrael itself. Okay, that's the first.
Almost like a love letter, you know, written by someone who's far away.
Well, no, yes.
Get back.
Yeah, in fact, he talks about chiba. He talks about the love and the chabok and the embracing. That's clearly what this is all about. It's a very unusual sefer. That's what makes it so unusual. The fact that he has this love for it. It's everything he writes. Now you have to understand. Once again, we talk about reaching out to the non-religious, but he's talking about Judaism. He's talking about Judaism is going to only be the real Judaism has got to be there. You understand? It all comes together. So he's reaching out to the non-Jews, and they're making Judaism take place by their being there. But that's not the end of life. So the end of life is not simply secular kibbutzim. Remind me on Tuesday, I don't have time to do it now, it's a six minute tape about Rav Soloveitchik reflecting on a story that happened to him when he went to Eretz Yisrael in 1935. It's a tape he actually made in 1960, speaking to a group of students. I believe there were students, smicha students at YU. And Rav Soloveitchik made one trip to Eretz Yisrael in 1935. In 1935, among the various different stops, he stopped at a secular kibbutz. And they told them years before about, remember, 1935 is the year that Rav Kook dies. So Rav Kook's at the end of his life. But they tell him a story how Rav Kook visited their kibbutz on Shabbat. It's a powerful story. It's an audio. You'll have to listen for 5 minutes. There are pictures of Rav Soloveitchik that go together with the tape. You'll see pictures, stills of Rav Soloveitchik, but it's an audio tape of Rav Soloveitchik. It'll blow your socks off. It'll blow you away. We'll do it in Mirtz Hashem
on Wednesday. Tomorrow or Wednesday?
What I meant, did I say Wednesday? I said Wednesday. Did I say tomorrow?
You said Tuesday.
I meant Wednesday. Wednesday, we'll do it on Wednesday. Okay, me bad. We're going to do it on Wednesday. We'll do it on Wednesday. Okay. Tomorrow we're going to actually do Rav Soloveitchik stuff on Parshas Tzav. And we're going to do, we'll see what we'll do, if we do all of our salvation stuff on Tzav, maybe we'll see if we have a little bit of time for maybe Purim, I'll see. And then the second half, I'm going to continue talking about the story of Atalia and actually the restoring order into the, into Malchut Yehuda and Malchut Yisrael after the death of Atalia. I think we first have to knock her off. She's still alive, if I'm not mistaken. We're in the middle of that revolt. We first got to get rid of her, okay? And then we'll see what happens. And then, by the way, just so when you, the Tanakh is going to start to fly. You remember that chart I gave you about who's who comes after who? We'll have to really follow that chart because they're pretty short. This guy, new king, this is what he did. Go look up the rest and say for Devar Yom of the kings. Next king did this, and he died. Next guy, and so forth. So it keeps flying for a bit of time until we get down to Chizkiyahu. But it's really, if it's easy to go through. Anyways, takes us pretty much up to 12 o'clock. Guys, have a wonderful day, okay? I'm really pumped about doing Rav Kook stuff. It's really exciting. Speaks to me in a very unusual way. I don't think I could have done this years ago. But I think really I'm
good. Good summary you get as well, Rabbi. Really, yeah. Good summary you get.
Great. Okay, thank you so much. Okay, Yom Tov, everybody. Have a wonderful day. Chazak Baruch, Albert, okay, Ralph, Semi, Yochanan, Stuart, and Rafael. Yom Tov, have a wonderful day, everybody. Good. See you guys tomorrow.